come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Got two on the field. He's got two. 35, 30.
Rogan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com, joined by Paul Dottino. I am John Schmelk for the next 1 hour to talk some Giants football and NFL football as well. Mandatory minicamp is just a day away. It takes place this week, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, as the Giants get ready for their final set of practices, Paul, before everyone heads off into the wilderness. They do their own thing for about 6 weeks, I'd say, give or take. Then they get back here the 30th or 31st of July. The training camp schedule not yet final, FYI. But we'll get them here in training camp, and this is your last look at these guys for a month and a half, and that's when Paul Dottino retreats into his cave and hibernates a little bit until he can get back out into the sun in end of July.
That is the black hole of the calendar, John.
It is.
From the end of minicamp till the beginning of summer training camp. It is the big dearth of darkness.
Dearth of darkness.
That we have in the NFL schedule. There's no free agency to deal with. There are no drafts to deal with. There are no mini camps to deal with. It's just dark. Now, here's what I will say, though, John. The one thing that I'm very interested in seeing in these 3 days, and then, of course, as we move the calendar ahead, is specifically, just in general, the health of this team. You know, we posted our question, and I guess we'll let you get to that in just a second.
Go for it. What do you got?
Well, we're asking you folks about the top priority, the number one question you'd like to have answered at the Giants minicamp this week. And really, my opening comment has to do with that, because I don't know a lot about these guys who have been, I don't want to say nicked up because they're not playing right now, but guys who haven't been able to do everything that they'd like to do during the course of the minicamp. And they're going to have, as John said, approximately 6 weeks now to go off on their own, to do what they need to do, to get their treatments, to get their training in. And fingers crossed that when they finally get back here, John, in about 6 weeks or so, that Tom Coughlin has as many of these guys available to put on the field as possible, because there's a lot of competition.
Correct. But that's why I'm not going to say health right now is my biggest question. Because health now, to me,
well, today,
is irrelevant.
Today.
Whether or not Odell Beckham Jr. practices tomorrow doesn't have much of an impact on what's going to happen this season.
Understood.
And frankly, even if Odell Beckham is able to practice tomorrow, which would be great.
What does it mean?
What does it mean? He could easily, you know, tweak the hamstring and then he's out again in the summer. And quite frankly, even if he's ready to go off on the Giants, I wouldn't practice him anyway. If he walked in my office and said, I don't feel anything on my hamstring today, I'm 100%, let's go. You know what I tell him? Relax the next few days, stretch it out, keep it healthy. We'll see you in July.
I agree with you with him, but there are several other players who would give me peace of mind if I could at least see them on the field. Nat Burhe hasn't been able to do anything. Larry Donnell hasn't been able to do anything. I mean, he's been in a boot. I mean, that's no secret. Coach
that's
Coughlin
correct.
Has said that.
But Larry Donnell also has been here last year. It's not like he needs the mental reps.
I just feel better if I got to see him in uniform once before we took a break.
Uh-huh.
It's a, you know what it is? It's a confidence thing in the back of my mind, just to kind of, you know, that lollipop that makes you feel a little better, the security blanket that says, hey, guess what? At least he got on the field. I'm just saying.
All I'm saying is that I don't think there's anybody here, Paul, except perhaps Burhe. And I think maybe he's one of the exceptions to my opinion
reps.
Here. Because he needs the reps. And he needs to go out there and show the coaches what he can do. So when they get on the field at the end of July, he's not proving all of the little things that he should have been able to prove during minicamp.
Yeah.
Like, I know the system. I know the play calls. I know how to organize things. I know how to do this. I know how to do that. I know how to do this. You know, Cooper Taylor is showing that now. You know, Michael Thompson's showing that now. Landon Collins is showing that now. Mm-hmm. Nat Burhe hasn't shown that yet. And that's what he's missing out on. I would like to see him, above all else, if I had to pick one guy on this roster that's been hurt and banged up that I'd like to see on the field this week, it's Burhe.
Yeah. No doubt. No doubt. I totally agree with that. I would also say this. As much as I'm impressed with what Victor Cruz has done, I'm with John on this in terms of being cautious. Don't want to see him doing anything out there this week other than his continuing to run around on the field.
He's already cutting full speed on the side.
Let him do that.
What else you want him to do?
Exactly. Let him do that. You know, I fully don't expect him to do anything else, and that's perfectly fine with me. He's not basically the guy I'm talking about. I'm more, like I said, some of the other names I'm talking about. Burhe is the number one guy that I would be most concerned about.
No question. The other guy I want to see get on the field as well is Odighizuwa. He's a guy that really hasn't done a whole lot in OTA so far, Paul. He's young. He's inexperienced. We know he doesn't have a ton of reps.
Yeah,
he
double
played
O.
4 years. Yeah, and he hasn't practiced.
Coach said leg.
Yeah, and that's very that's in the realm of the NHL lower body injury.
Where I love it, John.
It's his leg.
Good job.
Leg's pretty long. There's a lot of parts to it.
Didn't Coach say the other day, it goes from here to here?
Exactly. No, yeah. Someone actually asked him, can you be more specific? There's a part of the leg, and he points his leg from here to here. So,
well, yeah,
I don't know what's wrong with the kid, but I'd like to see him get some reps out there on the field. You know, and frankly, another guy I'd like to see out there just a little bit, how about DeMontre Moore?
Yeah.
I mean, look, I'm not saying he should push it if his shoulder's not ready.
Okay, so you are sharing some of my issues here.
But
make you feel better, right?
It would, a little bit. But I'm picking guys that have something to prove this year. Well, I'm picking two guys that are inexperienced that need the reps. And I'm picking a third guy. I'm not going to call it a do-or-die season for him, but I'm picking a third guy that, frankly, needs to make that jump this year.
Yeah. Yeah, I have no problem with anything you just said. I mean, and the bottom line is, Steve Spagnuolo is the Giants' new defensive coordinator. Yes, it's a throwback to the future for those of us who were here before. But
you mean a throwback to the past?
Okay.
The hell is a throwback to the future? What does that even mean?
I have no idea. But the point is...
Well done, sir.
Thank you. The point is... You picked up that loose ball. The point is...
Loose ball, all right.
That even though there are a number of us who know Spags and know of his past, these players have not.
Yes.
And so the point is, as much time as they can get with him before the Giants take the field for real is good.
And that's why the guys that I mentioned that I'd like to be out there are all on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah,
because they're all
I can
trying
understand
to learn
that.
A new system. I have confidence that the guys on this roster are going to be fine offensively.
You know,
the receivers are going to be fine. Danelle's going to be fine. Eli's going to be fine. Well, the offensive line, we'll see, but all the guys are out there. They're healthy, so we're not worried about those guys. And the running backs are going to be fine, too. But I would like to see this defense get as many reps, especially the young guys, in this new and what can be a complicated defense as much as possible for the season. So.
Last year, and I know we want to get to the calls, John, last year we were talking this time about how Coach McAdoo is going to be installing a brand new offense. It will be dramatically different than what Kevin Gilbride did. And then, on top of that, okay, the Giants had the Hall of Fame game, which was going to give them that extra week of practice.
Right.
And we were all saying, boy, isn't that going to be fun? Because all these folks are now going to have more time to get involved with Coach McAdoo and his stuff. Well, that's not the case this year. Okay, the Giants are not going to have that extra week, so to speak, to deal with Spags' stuff. So, you know, as we have said before, and you mentioned this about a month or two ago, John. Remember the first two games of Spags' tenure the first time, they had to figure stuff out.
And
it would be a shame if they had to do that again.
And I think it's fair to say that group of players back in 2007 were probably a little bit more talented, definitely a lot more experienced than the groups that's together here with the Giants. Now, this group might develop into a group with more talent. Who knows? We'll see. But there's a lot of youth and inexperience right now, and you want to see them get as much run as possible in this defense because, quite frankly, Paul, early in the season, you start off against Tony Romo and Matt Ryan. Those aren't two guys you can have bad defensive games against. They're going to burn you. You got Dez Bryant.
No.
And by the way, I don't buy the fact that Dez isn't going to play in that first
game. Ah, yeah.
That's what you call a negotiating tactic. And then you have Julio Jones in week two, you know, running around because they don't know what's going on in the secondary. You got to get your ducks in a row. That's why I want to see a guy like Burhe, who you're counting on to play a role this year, to get out there and get out there and practice, get something done, two of your rotational defensive ends and more in Odighizuwa, get him out there, get it done. Devon Kennard's been in and out too. I like to see him get healthy and ready to go. So those are the guys that I'm worried about. John Beeson, no, I'm not worried about him. He'll come in the summer. He's smart. He knows his stuff. He's the last guy I'm worried about understanding a defensive system. He's going to be fine. But for these young guys, let's get him some more reps. Let's get him healthy. Let's get him out there on the practice.
Okay, I'm good. Let's get calls.
All right. We have some open lines, folks. Give us a ring at 201-939-4513. We'll pop you right up on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. A couple things I want to stress with you guys. As soon as calls comes in, we'll take them here on Giants.com. Poll number one, minicamp rule, same as OTA rule. So as much as we're talking about things we want to see and things we want to learn, the facts still remain. These guys are still wearing T-shirts. They're still wearing shorts.
Yeah.
You're not seeing any pads. You're not seeing any contact. You're not seeing any tackling. So the amount that we're going to be able to judge exactly what's going on in the practice field is going to be somewhat limited here, folks. We'll give you as much as we can. we'll try to insinuate and figure out and analyze and foreshadow what this might mean in the future. But as Tom Coughlin said last week, guys, they're wearing shorts and T-shirts. I can't know anything until they start hitting people.
It's video game football. I mean, there's no other way to put it. It's video game football. In a way, it's not even flag football. It's video game football. So, you know, again, the skill position guys, you can see a little bit more with them. But the guys in the trenches, just, I mean, forget about it. There's not much you can gain from these things. I will say this, John. Corey Washington's another fella I want to keep an eye on, too. Mm-hmm. Because Coach himself gave Corey some plaudits during the course of the early OTAs, because he was working with the ones, had to out of necessity with no Beckham and no Cruz available, and Corey seems to have really improved his game as a receiver. Now, the one thing we're not going to see much of here in the minicamp, I don't think we're really going to see how much more he can improve himself on specials. That's kind of, again, a tough thing to show, because a lot of things on specials is you got to get down there, you got to work hard, you got to hit, you got to figure out how to get disengaged, and et cetera, et cetera. But at least what we've seen now is an uptick, okay? We have seen an uptick on Corey Washington's ability to run the complete route tree, to steal a phrase from Eli Manning. That's good. That's absolutely good. Now, he's a guy who's not injured, who doesn't have to learn a new system. This is just a guy that we want to see more of.
Right, and he's had the opportunity to run with the ones because Cruz has been out, Beckham's been out, so he's been moved up the depth chart. And, you know, I think we'd like to see Marcus Harris a little bit more. He's been doing a pretty good job in practice so far. You know, he was playing well in camp last year until injuries derailed his first season with the Giants, so we'll see what he can do. And, you know, I think what you're seeing too, Paul, is the defense creating some level of chemistry. You'll see our Inside the Huddle cornerbacks piece this week. And I had a chance to talk to Prince. We'll see if this makes a cut, but I will give you a kind of inside thing which he told me while I interviewed him for the piece.
Okay.
Number one, I asked him, Prince, who's the leader right now in your secondary? What do you think he said?
I think he probably said DRC, although DRC doesn't seem to be that kind of guy outside the lines.
He said we don't have one yet.
Did he? Wow.
And he said that one guy, he said he's a role he would like to fill, but his quote to me was that since they haven't really played a full 16-game season yet, he's played one
right
in his first 3 years or first 4 years.
Right. Four.
He doesn't feel like he's ready to be that guy yet, because he hasn't been consistent enough himself. That was his God honest truth answer, which I appreciate. He gave us an honest answer. So I think developing that chemistry and that leadership and just how things go in the secondary is going to be very important.
Well, we said this, I guess it was last week on one of the shows, the fact that Prince has signed with WFAN to be a regular on-air contributor tells you a little bit something about where his mentality is.
Yep.
Because you're not doing that unless you feel like you're going to step up into that leadership role, at least in some fashion.
He also said in an interview he believes Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie might be a top five athlete in the entire NFL, which I thought was interesting.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Any position. He thought he was the best
wow.
athlete. And he thought he was the best athlete on the team, and he included Odell Beckham Jr. in that, which I thought was interesting.
Wow. Three times over. That's whew. Okay.
I mean, I think he's the fastest guy in the team, and that's including Odell Beckham Jr. I think if you get a straight 60-yard race,
I agree.
Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie wins that race.
I agree.
Everybody else on the team.
I absolutely agree with that. But you're taking it to a whole nother level when you say he's the most athletic.
Hey, DB's got to stick up for DBs, right?
Has he seen JPP's backflips?
Well, I don't know if he's including backflipping into the...
That's pretty athletic.
All right, we got a call. Keep bringing them in, folks. As we get them, we'll take them. 201-939-4513. Nathan's in New Jersey. Nathan, you're up first here on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. What's going on, Nate?
Hello?
Nathan.
Hello?
Hello, Nathan. Going once. Nathan going twice. And put him back on hold, Greg. Check if he's there. We'll go back to Nathan if he picks back his phone. 201-939-4513. But I thought that was interesting, talking about the position. He said the young safeties are doing a pretty good job getting into it, learning the system, starting to figure out exactly what's going on back there. But, you know, it's a learning process. And, you know, these guys are going to have to figure it out, and it's not going to be super smooth. But they will get there. It's Jason in New Jersey? Ah, Jason and Nathan aren't even close, Greg. What the heck happened? All right. Let's try Jason in New Jersey. Jason, let's try this one more time. What's going on, pal?
Okay.
Just regarding one of the topics last week about most important reserve, I think that the most important reserve right now is John Jerry.
Okay.
If he is a reserve, because right now you see he's getting a lot of first-team reps. I still say that the week one starting offensive line against the Cowboys will be John Jerry at right guard and Jeff Schwartz at right tackle. But for the sake of argument, if John Jerry is the reserve, he's the most important reserve because – Jeff Schwartz was placed on IR twice last year. He couldn't even get through the preseason. Then after that, he couldn't get through two regular season games. So the chances of and once he does get hurt, John Jerry is immediately the starting right guard, assuming he is a reserve right now. So I feel like based on the history, I do not feel that Schwartz can last games, and I feel that John Jerry will get a lot of playing time as the right guard.
You know what, Jason? I think that's a very good selection. I wasn't on the show last week when you talked about most valuable reserves, so I'm interested to see what other people had to say about it. Do you consider any one of the top three running backs a reserve, or do you consider them all co-starters?
Yeah, well, I had mentioned Vereen, and Anita disqualified me and said, you know what, Vereen's going to get too many touches. You can't call him a reserve.
How about Andre Williams?
She was of the opinion that all three are going to split. And I back down on that one.
That's fair.
In fact, you got the same problem with Randall. I mean, if Cruz is in the mix, Randall's the third receiver. He's going to see a lot of time. Is he a reserve?
So you're basically counting the third receiver and your third cornerback as virtual starters, which is fair.
I think you have to.
I agree. I think on offense, John Jerry would be your most important reserve. Defensively, I would say, Jason, my most important reserve. Are you counting Robert Ayers as a starter at defensive end?
Wow, that's a good question. He didn't come up in the conversation.
I guess he'd be one of your starting ends right now.
I would think he would be a starter. I would think if you had to go reserve, you could probably put Kerry Wynn in there as a reserve, mm-hmm. right? Because Ayers and JPP would be penciled in as your starters. DeMontre Moore is probably ahead of Wynn on the depth chart.
And there goes Jason. Thanks for the call, Jason.
Okay.
Where would you, Paul, go with the two starting defensive tackles?
Well, I think you're probably going to go.
Hankins, obviously.
I think Hankins, and you know what?
Ellis?
I would think. I would think against Dallas.
Or is it Jenkins?
I would think against Dallas, Ellis probably starts that game.
All right, because if Ellis isn't the starter, I would consider him one of the most important reserves.
That's a good call. We had somebody call up on that show and said, Ryan Nassib. Because if Eli gets hurt, Nassib better be good.
Yes. Well, see, I'm also going through – see, the positions I'm trying to target here, and I think he made a good point with Schwartz, and I think that's a good one. But I think on the defensive line, you have so much rotation. Having good guys in those third and fourth defensive line positions are very important.
It's a dilemma to truly identify who a reserve is. I mean, who qualifies?
Right. Well,
that in itself makes it very difficult.
Dude, how important is Jameel McClain backing up two or three linebacker positions?
I offered him up. That was my guy. That was the guy I actually offered to her, and I said, I'm going to go with McClain because we don't know about Beeson's durability.
Yeah, absolutely.
And even if Beeson is able to stay healthy, okay, how many times is McClain going to get on the field as well? Because you're experimenting with a full-timer in Devon Kennard. He has never been a full-time player before. We don't know. We think he's going to be really good, but we don't know. You've got JT Thomas on the other side, who is a newcomer to this scheme and this system. And I honestly can't tell you exactly what he's going to be. At least McLean's a known quantity.
Well, how about this? Whoever ends up being the fourth corner, that's also going to be very important spot. I don't know who it is, but it's going to be somebody. Back to the phones, 201-939-4513. Let's go to line four, Greg. Let's go to Shy in Forest Hill. Shy, what's going on?
Hey, John, Paul, great show. Listen every day.
Thanks, Shy. Appreciate it. What's up?
So in terms of today's topic of top performer, what are they most looking to find out during minicamp? For me, in terms of actual performance, you know, I put very little stock into, say, OTA performance, and then I work my way up a little more stock into minicamp. Training camp gets a little more, and then preseason, you know, is a form final opinion. So in terms of the top question to answer in this minicamp, to me, it's literally, can they get to training camp without sustaining another major injury? you know, performance-wise, they'll be able to tell a little bit, you know, here and there, certain positions are harder than others. So for me, you know, I just want to avoid getting that, you know, ESPN alert on my phone like I did a few weeks ago saying, reports will be the out, you know, after an injury. I'm at my sister-in-law's graduation and, you know, good thing they didn't call her name as I yelled out a no. That would have been a little awkward.
Shai, you know what? Let me say this. And you are 100% right. I think your approach is right on the money. And I realize a lot of the coaches probably won't think this way, but big picture-wise, if you get through these next 3 days without a major injury, I don't care if Eli Manning doesn't complete one pass in 3 days. You know what I'm calling it? A successful minicamp.
I was hoping that they would just shut Beckham down until training camp, and then I saw that they did, and I was, good move. I don't want to see him practicing. I have another kind of historical question for Paul, and then I'll hang up and take the opinion off
there.
Paul, in the 1958 championship game, Colts obviously won on a one-yard touchdown run. Why didn't they just kick the short field goal instead of risking the fumble? I'll take the answer off air. Great show. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Shai. Appreciate it.
Oh, that's very easy because the Colts had absolutely no confidence at all in their field goal kicking game. In fact,
and weren't the conditions very bad, too?
They weren't horrible. They weren't horrible. Okay. I mean, I want to give you the stats on their kicker that year. He was absolutely dreadful. Baltimore Colts stats, 1958. I want to share this with you.
Yeah, I'm surprised you don't have your yellow legal pad when you track that game live with you.
Oh, God. He's asking for it.
No?
No. Where's the PATs? PATs are on here somewhere, aren't they? Don't they
kicking.
Keep this
go
here?
Go down, go down. You missed
go
it.
Down?
Go
down?
Yeah.
Go
come
down?
Come on, come on, come on. Kicking. And
okay.
Kicking upon returns, you want kicking.
Okay, here we go, here we go. Here we go. Yeah, Myra was 4 of 10 on field goals that season, and Retschler was only 1 of 4.
And frankly, he was only 48 of 51 on extra points. It was actually a pretty poor percentage.
Yeah, so that year, they were 5 of 14 overall on field goals. I mean, their kicking game was horrific.
What down was it when they scored that touchdown?
Oh, boy. I want to say that was it was first or second. It was early in the down.
Yeah, so at that point, it's almost a safer play just trying to run it in. And then fourth down, you have to kick the field goal. You kick it.
Yeah.
But it's much easier and safer to run it in early.
Yeah, their kicking game was just horrific. So anyway, that's the answer to the question.
201-939-4513. Going back to the phone. Let's go to line one and say what's up to Bill in Arizona. Bill, you're up next, pal.
Hi. How are you doing, guys?
Doing well, Bill. How are you?
Good. Hey, I like to say that when I think you guys mentioned it before, our secondary really doesn't have that much of a leadership. And when we lost Roll, we lost a big part of that. But I believe that Roll filled another part of that, and that was more or less he was the guy that kept other teams in line. He was more like the enforcer on defense. Who do you think guys that could step up and fill that enforcer role on defense and on offense? Guys who would have potential to be that type of player or that type of leader.
As in terms of an enforcer, I think John Beeson has that personality. He can be that guy. I think Jameel McClain, to a certain extent, can be that type of guy. Once Jason Pierre-Paul, and I'm assuming he's going to be here for training camp, I think he can be that type of guy considering his veteran status on this team. Colin Jenkins on the defensive line can be that type of enforcer. And I want to add this on the secondary, too. Just because a individual sole leader hasn't emerged yet doesn't mean he's going to. And two, a lot of times, if you have that leader on the defense, which Beeson can be, you don't necessarily need one guy to lead each individual position group. It can be a group effort, Bill, and it can work.
What about offense?
Leader on offense to enforce. I mean, it's funny. One thing that I took out of they had a town hall meeting last week. You saw this written about a little bit on Giants.com. Pat Hanley tweeted it, where a few of the players, Eli, Cruz, and Beeson, then you had John Mara, Jerry Reese, and Tom Coughlin talk to season ticket holders. And they asked, who they asked? They asked Victor Cruz and John Beeson, Cruz specifically, have you ever seen Eli Manning get really, really mad? Because he's always so calm. And they asked Victor, have you ever seen Eli Manning get really, really mad? And Victor kind of leans back and he goes, you know what? You don't see Eli get mad, but you get the look. And it's not the look of anger. It's the look of disappointment that you just let down the team. And that's much, much worse than Eli getting mad at you. And he kind of did like the imitation where Eli kind of just looks at you and then he gives like the little head shake, one of those. And he goes, that's the worst thing you can get. Because Eli's just disappointed because he doesn't think that you worked hard enough leading up to that game because you ran the wrong route, didn't know your assignment, and it's like, you know what? You should be better than this.
Good stuff.
So Eli can do it in his non-vocal, angry type of way.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Bill. I thought that was a funny story.
That's a really cool story.
It's the Eli look and the – it's like, you know, it's like when you come on and say, you know, you're going to flash back to the future and I give you one of these.
Yeah. Okay.
201-939-4513. Let's stick on the phones and go to Abdul in Minnesota. Abdul, you're up next, pal.
Hey, guys. I missed the beginning of the show, so I'm not sure if you guys have touched this, but I just heard on WFAN that JPP is not showing up for his mandatory camp. Is that true?
Well, it's keep in mind that he doesn't have a signed contract, so therefore it's
okay.
It isn't like he's going to get fined for it because he hasn't signed his tender yet. Okay. You can't get fined if you're not technically a member of the team, which he isn't yet because he hasn't either signed the long-term contract or signed the free agent franchise tender.
Okay, and I may be stepping a little bit out of bounds here, but I am the FAN Giants beat reporter, and I certainly did not report that.
Mm.
Oh, I mean, someone's trying to take your job. I'm actually very concerned about you right now. Is if someone's over there calling FAN, telling them that JPP's not here, and you're sitting here with me, what the hell is going on?
I mean, you know, you see me in living color. I'm not cloned at the moment, so I can't speak to that.
Now,
that's
you
all
know,
I'm
you
saying.
Know what it's from?
It wasn't my report.
I actually just saw a tweet. Somebody retweeted it. Let me bring it up here. One second, Abdul. I will let you continue in just a second, Ian. Ian Rappaport tweeted about 6 minutes ago, it's expected by now, but you won't see unsigned free agent tag players like Dez Bryant, Justin Houston, et cetera, at minicamp on Tuesday. And he threw Jason Pierre-Paul into that mix, too. So, again, that's what he expects. Who knows if he's going to be here or not. But, again, it's not mandatory for him because he's not actually signed by the team. So, until that deadline comes, which I believe is July 15th.
July 15th
we will see
the
what
franchise
happens.
Tender deadline.
Yeah.
I hear that. Yeah, I was listening to Evan and Joe, and it was one of the updates came up between their segments.
Oh, it's anyway, Minko. You better call Minko. Minko's trying to take your job, Tino. Yeah, Minko here. Good morning.
So, it's kind of assumed that he's going to sign this tender or this contract, right? If we're all assuming right here, why isn't he in here? I think it's kind of a bad way to start the year. You know,
well,
we have a new defense coming in.
Let me address this. Let me address this way for you. And this goes with any guy who gets the franchise tag. He has until July 15th to sign the 1 year tender, which then allows him to negotiate during the course of the season a long term deal. If he still believes that there's a possibility, if player X, all right, I'm not going to speak to Jason because I haven't talked to him or Drew Rosenhaus or Jerry Reese specifically about their deal, and I'm not going to. But if player X still believes that there's the possibility that he will be able to achieve a negotiation for a long-term deal before the July 15th deadline, there's no advantage to him signing it. You follow? Because once he signs it, now he's got the one-year franchise tag, and it's like, okay, now I'm responsible for this and this and this, and I'm responsible right. for mandatory minicamp. It's like, you know what? There's really no harm, no loss to him to not sign.
And I do it quite frankly, there is a potential loss because if he shows up without it being signed,
well, now there's a problem.
And he gets injured, there's absolutely no protection for him, which is where you run into an issue.
I would never, ever expect him to show up not being, him not signing. I understand right. that. That's way too much of a chance to take. I think that, you know, he knows he's going to sign it. No one else is going to sign him to a new contract. You know, the Giants aren't going to suddenly say, hey, we'll give you, you know, $90 million for 6 years. He knows he's going to sign it. He's just waiting until the 15th, the last minute, to sign it. And I would think that it'd be a great, you know, say, listen, I'm going to sign it, come in there, learn the new defense, become a leader, you know, really show the Giants that he should get that extended contract.
You know, Abdul, I understand what you're saying, and in a perfect world, I think you're right.
Yeah, I get you.
But unfortunately, the way things work in the NFL these days, and I'll let you finish up after I make this point, you see movement when you get to deadlines. That's why in the real world, whether it's in sports or in politics or in anything else, in business deals, you set deadlines because deadlines force movement. Remember last year, all we heard about with the Saints and Jimmy Graham on how far apart they were on a contract.
Right.
They're never going to figure this out. He's going to hold out. And then what happened on July 15th? On July 15th, they came to a long-term contract extension because you know what? Both Jimmy Graham felt the heat. The team felt the heat. They probably both moved a little bit. They met in the middle. I wouldn't be surprised if that happens with Justin Houston, with Dez Bryant, with Demaryius Thomas, with JPP. I'm forgetting a couple other franchise guys out there, Julio Jones. You know, this could happen with a lot of these players once you get to July 15th. That's why you don't sign the tender now, because it doesn't allow for that late movement when you get closer to the deadline.
And I will let you go, and thanks for the call. I would add this to what John just said. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Abdul. Finish up.
You guys talk about cap and stuff. You know, in all teams I played with, captains kind of happens during preseason. You know what I mean? Like, especially with the new group, you know, you got to see people in battle and, you know, showing up, working together. I think once that happens, once people are, you know, doing the two-a-days and stuff, and the rookies are, everyone's together, a leader will come up, you know, and it might be, you know, it might be a group leader. It might be, you know, DRC, who's actually showing on the field, and then someone else, you never know, might, you know, it could be a quarter, someone who has a little more veteran experience, you know, tell the young guys, you know, step it up. So I think I being a captain isn't that big of a deal. You know, I personally, you know, when I played sports, I was inspired by myself or my coach or whatever, but the captain really, you know, I don't know. I think that's more of a ceremonial thing, and some captains are better than the others. So I think the Giants will be okay, and, you know, I think Prince will be fine. And anyway, thanks for the phone call. I appreciate it, guys.
Thanks, Abdul. Appreciate you calling in.
Thank you. I just would add this. Most oftentimes, when a guy gets franchise tagged, you hear some verbal stuff going on where he's not very happy. Most players look at the franchise tag as a bad thing. They
like
don't
what
like
we
it.
Heard from Dez Bryant last week at the end of the week.
Right. Now, I only want to say this to you and every other Giants fan that's out there. Again, I have not talked to Jason recently, have not talked to Drew Rosenhaus, nor have I talked to Jerry recently, but
he tried to. They just don't want to talk to him. It's understandable.
Everything you've heard from Coach Coughlin to this point, and it's all on the clips on Giants.com, is he had texted Jason earlier in the spring and had communication with him. Says, I expect him to be here. And Tom does not seem to be wavering from that at all. Every time he's asked about it, he says, I expect him to be here. There doesn't seem to be any indication from Tom Coughlin that there's ruffled feathers.
Correct.
Nor is there any indication from Jason or his camp that they're upset about the tag, or that they are all angry about the negotiations, the way they're going, and no threats of any type. I haven't heard any of that, have you?
Here's the bottom line. The franchise tag now has become a reality for every great player that develops into a great player during their rookie contract. It's just the nature of the business.
That's it.
It happens with 99, well, I shouldn't say 90, but it happens, I would say, with the majority of players, more than 50%. You know what? you're going to get the tag splashed on you. Because unless the team is willing to pay above and beyond like the Texans did for J.J. Watt, for example, and they went way over the top to keep him, which is understandable. J.J. Watt's an over-the-top type of player.
And let's not forget healthy. That's the other thing. I think that the only way that this franchise tag gets avoided, because it's now, like he says, it's the general procedure now. It's like standard procedure.
And you hit it right on the head. It's because of the injuries.
You, if you can stay healthy for your entire rookie contract and kick people's butt and go to multiple Pro Bowls, well, then maybe they're not going to tag you.
And you know what?
That's
about
it.
Injuries, and also, for example, in the case of Des Bryant, this has been publicized. It's off the field.
Well, yeah.
If you can't trust a player to behave off the field or trust them to stay healthy, and they're two very separate issues, obviously, but they both impact the player's value, you know, why not wait as long as possible before you guarantee a ton of money to that player? Because
sure.
You know what? One more year of information can really change your opinion on a player.
Without a doubt.
Just use a different sport, for example. Would the Knicks have given Carmelo Anthony a five-year max contract coming off of pretty serious knee surgery like he did this year?
Yeah.
Probably not. But they were very happy to do it last year because he wasn't coming off of regular serious knee injury. So one season can make all the difference. So why not wait if you're the team? The player makes good money. You have him underneath your control. It's a guaranteed one-year franchise tag once he signs that the player is getting his money no matter what. And you get one more year of information before you have to decide whether or not to give that player salary cap altering type of money, because that's what these big deals are, folks. It's not just that you're writing a big check. You're crippling, in some situations, depending on the contract, your salary cap.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think the Saints had to move all these guys? Drew Brees is making $35 million. It cripples your cap. So you have to be sure before you come to the long-term deal. You got to be sure, because once you're in on those long-term contracts, if it's a 5 or 6 year contract, you probably can't get out until after year three. And by then, you've had a player eating up 10-15% of your cap space without giving you production. And it makes it real hard to win doing that. Real hard to win.
Yep. Circumstances the way they are, it could be a crippler. So basically, in short, every box has to be checked for this guy to avoid, any player, to avoid a franchise tag. Talent, ability, work ethic, injury-free. I mean, check every box, and it's like, okay.
And there aren't many players that check every box.
It's extremely hard. In this league?
Look, J.J. Watt. They're
extremely hard.
J.J. Watt checks every box. Andrew Luck checks every box. Aaron Rodgers checks every box. You go to running backs. I mean, a year ago, I would have said Adrian Peterson.
Yeah, it's very rare.
Not anymore.
It's very rare. So anyway, it's just part of the normal standard operating procedure, SOP for you business folks out there, that the franchise tag is part of business now. And in that regard, in that vein, I don't see any fissure or acrimony involving the Giants and JPP, which is why I've been saying that all along. He's going to wind up signing the franchise tag, and he'll play here for 2015. I'm not coming off of that.
And the Giants can always tag him again. It'll cost them even more money because it's the average of the top five instead of the top 10, I believe. So it's an option next year, too. Just out of curiosity, and Charlie, I'll get to you in a second. I've been waiting the longest. Real quick. Guys in the league that you think do check all the boxes, I think is interesting.
Yeah, I haven't really thought about it.
Well, real quick. At wide receiver, Calvin Johnson, I would say.
He's been hurt.
When he signed his big deal, he checked all the boxes.
Yeah, but now
Julio Jones has been hurt. He's missed a couple years with injuries. I don't think he checks all the boxes.
No.
Demaryius Thomas comes close. He has no off-the-field issues. He's been great, but he is Peyton. So does that make you think? Defensively, guys that come to mind quickly, Luke Kuechly.
Yes.
He checks all the boxes.
Yes.
Excellent, excellent, excellent player. We mentioned J.J. Watt, obviously. Geno Atkins had a down year last year. Haloti Ngata's a little older.
No, definitely not.
McCoy, the Buck defensive tackle, he had too many injury issues earlier in his career.
Earlier in his career, DeMarcus Ware was one of those guys.
DeMarcus Ware was definitely a check all the boxes. You know another guy was check all the boxes when he was a free agent, got his contract? Jason Witten.
Yes.
He was a check all the boxes.
Yes.
Guy.
In any event.
There aren't many of them.
No.
There just aren't many of them.
No.
Patrick Peterson. Check all the boxes type of guy.
Yeah.
Richard Sherman, even with his mouthiness, check all the boxes type of guy.
Yeah, well, he just got hurt but in the Super Bowl. But
yeah,
I don't know how serious that is.
No, exactly. All right. That's cute. Maybe we can make that a offbeat conversation when we get into the offseason. That could be fun.
Okay.
Let's go to Charlie in Portland, Maine. Charlie, what's going on?
Hey, John. Hey, Paul. How are you all doing?
Doing all right, Charlie. How was your weekend, buddy?
Hey, it was really good. Really good. Hey, speaking about checking the box, I'm really concerned why Eli's contract hasn't been extended. And here's a guy who's played every game since 2004. And here's a guy that you know is a quarterback can win you a Super Bowl. And he's won two, and he can be the MVP in both.
Well, Charlie, let me ask you one simple question. How does it hurt the Giants for Eli to play under the exclusive franchise tag next year?
How does it hurt them? If they would do that, that would be probably a boatload of money that they would have to go against the salary cap.
Well, let me tell you something, Charlie. Whether it's the franchise tag or it's him getting a, you know, contract that's in line with the other quarterback contracts that have been signed over the past, you know, 2 years, it's going to be a boatload of money anyway. There might be a $4 or $5 million difference maybe on that initial cap hit, but you know what? It's going to be a you-know-what load of money.
Yeah, but, you know, $4 or $5 million can get you a pretty good player.
It can. It can.
But the thing is like, you know, they wouldn't let Coughlin hang on a one-year deal, right? You know, they wouldn't let a coach hang on a one-year deal, so they gave him another year. Why are you letting your best player hang on a one-year deal?
Because Coach Coughlin's salary doesn't affect the salary cap, and Eli Manning's does.
And that's a very important point. But, Charlie, you're worrying about a lot of stuff here that you don't have to. It's still my belief Eli's going to get a new deal before the season starts.
All right. I'll hold you to that. And if he doesn't get it, then we're going to talk.
That's fine. That's fine. I told you what was going to happen with Victor Cruz, too, but the media wanted to panic over that for 5.5 months. Okay. I told you what was going to happen.
I got a question for you, though. On these mandatory mini camps, this camp coming up, are they in pads or is this just another OTA type thing?
It is basically the same exact rules in terms of contact as OTAs. It's T-shirts, it's shorts, it's no contact. So, in other words, it's funny, and I mentioned that talk I had with Prince, and I asked him, I go, Prince, you know, this defense is big on bump and run. You guys can't even press receiver to the line of scrimmage. He goes, John, you know what? It's given us the opportunity to practice a lot of our off coverage. So, and Charlie, honestly, that's all when people ask me, you know, online, on Twitter, oh, how does this guy look? How does this guy look? I laugh. These guys can't even play football the way they're going to play football during the regular season. How the hell do you know who's doing well and who's not?
And hence the problem with sloppy tackling in the NFL. Because technique is so far gone these days because nobody's doing it.
Oh, by the way, I didn't have a chance, Charlie, to correct Abdul earlier when he said, oh, you know, these leaders, you know, they emerge when you do those 2 days during training camp. Guess what? Ain't no 2 days during training camp anymore either.
Long gone.
One practice a day and that's it.
Long gone.
That's right. There isn't. So, hey, my big thing is let's just get out of this mini camp without any injuries. That's the main thing. I don't want anybody else to go down. And if these other players are not 100%, then they shouldn't be on the field, period. I mean, we got plenty of time, so don't push them. But the Annika has arrived. We're going to see some maybe Odell Beckham's hamstring get a little bit better here soon. So we'll see what happens.
Thank you, Charlie.
Okay, John.
Take it easy. Now, Charlie, you know he always called up with his little, like, natural salve. He tells me he shipped it here. I am not involved in this. I claim no responsibility for anything. I told him not to do it, but Charlie's going to do his own thing. Apparently, a box, he told me, according to the tracking, the box has arrived here. And he I don't know who he addressed it. He addressed it to somebody. But I didn't give him any information. But apparently, he sent in his salve, and he is confident that this magical salve will keep Odell Beckham Jr. healthy. So we'll see what happens.
Oh, God. Okay. Hey, you know what? It's admirable that you'd like to help, and I'm sure that your thoughts and intentions are very well.
Charlie's trying to help. Absolutely, he's trying to help.
Very well directed, and that's great.
And I'm sure he's more than happy to send you stuff for your Nike 5 if you've been a little sore.
But to be perfectly honest with you, a voodoo doll would probably be as effective. After what the Giants have gone through.
201-939-4513. Jerome in North Carolina is up next. Jerome, what's going on, pal?
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
Doing well, Jerome. What's going on with you, bud?
Okay. I was been noticing the offensive line, since Beatty got hurt, we out for most of the season. We'll at least come back, you know, they expect him by at least game 11 or so. With the quality players that have been cut from teams recently, from judgment, I would say, is there a chance that the Giants will go after them, even though they're low-risk players, but good quality players? Would they go after them for, you know, that minimum?
If I understand the question, you're talking about the Giants looking elsewhere to pick up offensive line depth, in short. And I think the answer to that, John, is that they're always on the prowl. If they can find a player out there on the street who they think is going to make their 53, they're going to bring him in.
Hey, look, and Paul, there's evidence that they are kicking the tires. Tom Coughlin admitted and said in a press conference 2 weeks ago that Jake Long was in for a visit.
He said it. He was here.
They are kicking the tires on offensive linemen. So, yeah, I mean, look, they're looking at all these players. Paul and I can't tell you, you know, what the internal opinion is on a guy like Evan Mathis. Certainly, Pro Football Focus had him ranked as one of their top two or three guards the last couple of years, you know, for whatever that's worth, in your opinion. He's made a couple of Pro Bowls, so clearly fellow players think he's a pretty darn good player. But again, Evan Mathis, for just to give an example, why did he want to get out of Philadelphia? He wanted to get out of Philadelphia because he wasn't happy with the salary. What does that indicate? Wherever he signs, he's going to want to make more than the $5 million he was going to make with Philly this year, so he's going to want to get paid. So that's going to play a role in all this as well.
Well, is it possible some of the ones that I read, it was a Detroit lineman that was pretty good, but he got in some kind of trouble, and they cut him. I think it was one in Atlanta. I can't think of the name, but
Justin Blaylock?
He got two. So yep. He got in trouble, and they got cut. I was wondering, would the Giants take a chance?
Here's what I'll tell you. And this is SOP, again, standard operating procedure around the league.
Dominic Raiola is the center. He was a center, though.
Okay. And they wouldn't sign him.
Center isn't one of the positions the Giants need.
Here's the thing, okay? Every team has a pro personnel department. The pro personnel department, one of their responsibilities is to look at everybody else's roster, injury situation, and contract situation around the league. And one of the things that they do, okay, is they got their board, and much like the draft guys and the college scouts have their board, the pro personnel department, for lack of a better term, in most NFL franchises, has their board of guys who they believe are most likely to be set free for one reason or another. They think that there's a chance that that guy's going to be put out on the street. And so what happens is, they've got that collection of names across the league, and if one of those guys comes free, they then go sit down with their GM, okay, and their vice president of pro personnel, and they say, oh, guess what? Ding, 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 ding. One of the guys that we had on our radar is now available, okay? This is why he was allowed to leave or let go. This is why we think he's probably worth a look-see. What do you want to do? And then they have their little powwow, and maybe they pick up the phone and bring the guy in for a visit and a physical and an interview and a workout. Or maybe they decide we're not going to pick up the phone for a number of reasons. We just don't think it's a good fit. And that's how it works. This is not a secret. This is SOP.
Thank you, Jerome.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And one other thing on top of that, too. I mean, the same way when you're trying to figure something out about somebody, what's the first thing you do? You go on Google, and you Google or a guy's name. You go to Wikipedia, put the guy's name in Wikipedia, wait for the article, and you try to find something about him, right? Well, the Giants have a database. Every NFL team does. Where?
Yes.
They have a computer program where you go in there. It's their scouting database. They type in – I'm not giving away state secrets here. They type in the player's name, and the player comes up. And on that, they have – how the player was scouted when he was drafted, how he was scouted in recent games in the pro personnel department, looks ahead at games, and what the guy's done on the field. And they basically have reports on every single player in the league.
Injuries, stats, financial.
Everything.
All there.
everything. I'm not sure if they have running grades on each guy, and I'm not sure if they have actual grades, but they certainly have detailed scouting reports, what he does well, what he doesn't do well.
Sure.
Salary, all that sort of stuff is in those databases. So they have an idea of whether or not every single player in the league, no matter what his contractual status is, no matter what team he's on, whether or not that player would be able to help the Giants if he at some point became available. So trust me, guys, they keep track of everybody in this league, on rosters, off rosters, etc. They know exactly what's going on. Will in Florida. Will, what's going on next, pal?
Oh, hi. I have two quick questions, and I want to hear both of your opinions on it.
Sure.
First question, where do you think Odell Beckham will be ranked on the NFL's top 100 players of 2015 list?
Okay, well, let me ask you this. I got to admit, I haven't been paying attention to the list. Well, what number are they up to now?
I believe they're up to, they're about to announce the 30s on Wednesday.
Okay.
30s to 20.
So he hasn't shown up yet, and they're into the 30s. Now, this is player voting, correct?
Right.
All right, since it's player voting, and I got to imagine they're not going to want to give the rookie too much credit. I believe Odell Beckham will be somewhere in the high teens. That's going to be my bet.
I was going to say 15.
I'm going to guess 18.
I was going to say 15.
How about that?
So you guys don't think top five?
I think – do you know why? I think the veteran players are going to be like, I'm not voting a rook into the top five just yet. I think they're going to want to make him prove it another year. So I think somewhere between 15 and 20, that's my guess.
And I'll go a little wider on the range. I'll say second 10.
Okay, that's fair.
All right. Second quick question. Who do you think has progressed the best, or who do you think has done the best from what you've seen in OTAs, including rookies?
In terms of making a jump, I think one guy Paul mentioned earlier in the show is Corey Washington. He's made a big jump from his rookie year to his second year. And again, it's really the problem with this, Will, is that it's very hard to tell with the offensive and defensive linemen, even the linebackers, because you can't really have contact or do much in these unpadded practices. So, you know, a guy like Jay Bromley, you know, maybe the coaches think he's doing great. It's just from our perspective, it's very hard to tell what type of jump he's actually made. I think Ruben Randall's been a lot more consistent in practice from what I've seen than what he's been before. I've seen Adrian Robinson be more consistent with his hands in practice than what I've seen in years past.
Can I give you a name?
Yeah, go ahead.
You're going to be shocked with this one. Eli Manning's had a great offseason.
And you know what? It's funny Paul mentions that, and you always assume that Eli's going to be great, Will, but, boy, you know, in the past, you've seen Eli have some practices where you're not sure where the ball's going. You have not had one of those all offseason long, and I kid you not, he's been great.
Wait, who's that offensive lineman that Sean O'Hara, he said that he believes that Eli might have his best season yet in 2015?
That would not surprise me. I think one of the reasons, too, Paul, Eli looks so good. The length of the passes that he's throwing is much decreased than what it has been in years past.
They're shorter.
Back in the days, and I got to be honest, folks, watching a Kevin Gilbert practice is a lot more fun than watching a Ben McAdoo practice. And that's nothing against Ben McAdoo. He's a great system. The offense worked in games. It's very effective. But Kevin Gilbert practices were fun. That ball got aired out all over the field, left and right, 20-yard outs, post patterns, nine routes. That ball was flying down the field every other play. Ben McAdoo, you got a lot of passes to running backs, tight ends, 3 yards down the field. I'm not going to lie.
Practice is go Gilbride.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Will.
All right.
Appreciate it. It is true, though. It's funny. You know, and again, I'm not saying anything's wrong with it. I'm not telling you it's bad because they're practicing what they're going to do in games, and it's very effective. The offensive system we saw last year, Eli Manning, has been great. Eli, one of the best years of his career last year. So, again, this is not me criticizing the offense, but from merely an aesthetic viewing pleasure, interesting stuff. You used to see one-on-one coverage at the corners on deep routes, on post routes, all the way down the field. You just don't see it as much.
Yeah, you know,
you get maybe one deep pass every two or three practices.
Yeah, if Kevin wanted to take a couple of deep shots in a game, you're probably going to see 8, 9, or 10 of them during practice on a Thursday.
Absolutely. Well, in training camp even. I mean, just the, you know, so much of the playbook is, you know, run after the catch short stuff now.
Right.
And that's what you have to practice.
We're talking like these 40 and 50-yarders, 60-yard bombs. I mean.
Yeah. I mean, Gilbert used to throw those all the time in practice. Every other play, the ball is flying down the
field.
It's true. You don't see it anymore.
But you know what? We're kidding and joking with you, but really, it was something to watch. I will add one other thing, though, to this whole situation. The other day, Eli said to us,
he did work on strengthening his arm.
Yes.
And that may also have something to do with the extra zip and accuracy and everything else that we're seeing in him throwing the ball.
And one other thing he said, too, during that town hall meeting with the season ticket holders, I'm trying to think of the right phrase for it.
Right.
He mentioned how much his footwork has gotten in sync with how Ben McAdoo wants his footwork done.
Okay.
His footwork's gotten a lot better and the timing is much better than it was. And he said it was really, you know, a bit of a project to get his footwork where it needed to be. And that's no surprise. We talked about all year last year in training camp how important his footwork was. And I think that's really gotten to where it needed to be, too.
Glad to hear.
One more call before we say goodbye is Joe in Pennsylvania. Joseph?
Hey, hi, guys.
Hello, Joe.
Hi.
Tuning in with the show here earlier, you were talking about Eli being a leader in that. And I remember one time he got a little upset with Bradshaw. I forget what it was about. I don't know if it was picking up a block or something like that. But he did get in his face a little bit the one time I could recall.
It was a home game here at MetLife. I remember it.
Yeah, I forget. What was it for, Paul? Picking up a blitz or flaring out for a pass?
I don't remember
that.
He had
totally busted the play somehow, and I can't tell you specifically what it was he was supposed to do, but he totally busted the play, and Eli seemed to be very animated.
Well, you're in the game, right? He was in the game. They're competitive, both of them, you know what I mean? And, hey, so...
trying to think.
But my observation so far, these OTAs, I guess, like, you can't tell much. And I just think these receivers and the tight ends, I think they're looking good. And I really think that's where we're going to have a tough time there. And they're going to have to cut a couple of them, either receivers and tight ends, that might end up on other team squads, I believe so. And can Corey Washington or Harris, could they go on the I guess Washington's camp, but can Harris make the practice squad? I was just wondering because it's going
to
be.
We had this question the other day, John. Did you remember to look it up? I did.
What was the
and I
again?
Thought I th- you want to know about Soup Harris being a practice squad eligible player?
You know, I did not look it up.
I looked it up, and unless there's something that I'm missing, I determined that he was eligible.
I would think so. I mean, he didn't play any NFL games yet in his career, right?
Right.
So.
Right, because you know, we know four of them for sure, and they, you know, I'm hearing Preston Parker's looking good. He looked good last year, and I have to give it, you know, Eli looking good and everybody, because another year in the system, and you know what I mean. It is a lot of short passes, and I think they all got their the receivers and everybody have it down pretty good. It must be, you know what I mean. You go out so many yards or cut this way or that way, and a ball's on the money there, and they're all in. You know, sequence there, I believe.
Well, I will say this. There's no doubt, as we've said, Eli's throwing the ball better. There seems to also be, and John mentioned Randall before, in addition to me mentioning Washington. You know, those are the two guys who've been running most with the first team unit during the course of the offseason. And I agree with John. Both of them seem to have a much better feel for what's going on with the route tree and with the timing with Eli's passes. I don't think that's a coincidence. I think being in the system a second season is part of it. Perhaps it's also a maturing process, both with Washington, who certainly needs it in his second season, and maybe even Reuben Randall, who, by the way, is entering a contract year. And, you know, if he's truly going to be the guy that we thought he could be when he was drafted out of LSU, we've seen so many flashes. Well, this is the year maybe he puts it all together, and it'd be a good time for him to do it.
Hold on a second.
I just want to say, too, I said with the receivers and the tight ends, I think they're all looking good as far as running their routes and receiving the ball. You know, Robinson stepping up in that, and them young tight ends that they have, you know, that they're really going to have some tough cuts there with the wide receivers and tight ends, I believe, the most, really. So that's all I want to say.
Thanks,
Joe. Great show, guys.
Appreciate it. I got completely distracted. Ann in D.C. called last Thursday?
Yes.
How'd that go? We haven't heard from Ann in a while.
Well,
Was she very upset?
She wasn't upset. She was extremely calm and insisted to me that I should be, I don't know, what was the word she used, Greg? She said that I should be ashamed of myself, I believe.
That sounds about right.
Because I insisted that Corey Washington needed to enhance his value on special teams.
and she thought that that was disgraceful. I should be embarrassed and ashamed because Corey Washington is a wide receiver, should play wide receiver, and only wide receiver, and his special teams production should be irrelevant to the number of snaps he gets. And I very nicely reminded her that David Tyree was a wide receiver. I reminded her that Dominic Hixon was a wide receiver.
How about Dwayne Harris is a wide receiver.
And just because he's a wide receiver does not preclude him from being a special teams
especially
player.
When you're the last wide receiver on the roster.
I didn't want to go logic with her because it's clear that logic does not have any hope of registering with her.
I hope Ann's listening just so he can call you
well,
back.
So I figured let's not go with rational thought and football 101. We're going to go throw that book aside and just go with the obvious that wide receivers have played special teams here before. I figured that was the best way to go for somebody who just could not get a grip on things.
Did that work?
I don't know because she was one of the last calls, and at that point we just had to let her go. So, anyway. Oh, she'll call back. Sure. And Ann, if you're out there, you're welcome to call back,
but
you're
not
wrong.
Now because the show's over.
That's true.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us. For Paul Tatino, I'm John Schmelk. Now, by the way, the next 3 days, I'm going to be very busy with minicamp. So we're going to have, I believe, Lance and Anita tomorrow, then you and Anita on Wednesday.
Yes.
And then Lance and Anita again on Thursday. That's correct?
Okay.
And a lot of stuff come next 3 days, folks.
Are we doing Friday?
Well, I think, I'm not
Is
sure.
It me and you?
I might be taking off Friday.
Okay.
It depends what's going on.
Okay.
So wall-to-wall coverage of minicamp next few days. Lance and I did a little minicamp preview. That's going up this afternoon. Make sure you check that out. Later on this week, you're going to hear from all the assistant coaches. You're going to hear from the coordinators. You're going to hear from Tom Coughlin, obviously. You're going to hear from all the players. We'll have all the highlights from practice. We'll have sights and sounds. You name it. We're going to have wall-to-wall coverage of minicamp, and you'll even see some of this guy and this guy as well over the next few days, which might ruin the coverage, but we'll do our best. Everyone, thanks for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow on Giants.com. Hope the rest of your Monday goes well. See you then.
All right, here we go. Come on, man, we need the work. Let's go.
Got through the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
Broken intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.